Okay, thank you. It's a pleasure to present you some results we obtained in the VKS experiment in Cadarache in south of France. This work is made in collaboration between the CEA, the École Normale de Paris, the Stéphane Faure's group, and Jean-François Pinton's group in École Normale Supérieure de Lyon. As Chris Jones told you, Jean-François Pinton's house burnt in 2004, and now Stéphane's house burnt in just 5 days ago. I am very frightened about my house. These are not sodium fire, but before giving you some results, just to put some numbers. Here is the magnetic Reynolds number. Here is the magnetic Prandtl number, just to show you that numerical simulation are somewhere around here. Maybe you will not agree, but we can discuss about this. Experiments are somewhere around here. That is 10 to the minus 5. And here is the Earth. Here is the Sun. So we are very far from it. And if you add the rotation number on this graph in this direction, you will see that the experiments are, in fact, very close to the Sun, but very far from the Earth. So we are going very far from the real objects we have been talking about these days. Second point is that there are plenty of experiments all around the world. The first two experiments in Riga and Karlsruhe succeeded to achieve a dynamo action. It was in 2000. And there is also an experiment trying to do this in Russia, in Perm. And of course, the two famous experiments of Cary Forrest and Dan Lathrop, and also an experiment in Los Angeles. And the VKS experiment is here in Cadarache. This is the south of France. This is near the big project ITER you know about. Okay, what is the VKS2 experiment? Why VKS2? Because there were a former experiment, VKS1, which didn't succeed to get dynamo action. So VKS, VK is for von Karman flow. This is the flow in a cylinder between two rotating, counter-rotating propellers, rotating at frequency F1 and F2. And here you can see the mean field, the mean azimuthal field flow in blue. And because the propeller is rotating, you have a pumping. And here in red, you have the poloidal field. So we are doing this in sodium, with a power of nearly 300 kilowatts, and we've got some technical stuff, cooling system, and special mechanical seals because of sodium. Here is the inside of the container. What you see is the propeller here, one propeller with these curved blades. This is an iron propeller. We didn't succeed to get dynamo action with a stainless steel propeller, and I will speak a little bit about this. There is also an annulus here in the mid-plane, in the shear layer, because in between here, you have a very important shear between the two azimuthal cells with Kelvin-Helmholtz instability, etc. And the annulus here is made to stabilize this shear layer. And we also put some a copper shell with sodium outside, and the flow is inside. So we have sodium here at rest, and then a very turbulent flow inside here, two propellers. So you put all these things here, you put all these technical things around, you put it on a platform, and you go to the nuclear energy division of France, because they are used to handle sodium because of fast breeder reactors. And when you do this, you found two things. First, I will speak about symmetric driving, that is the two propellers rotating at the same speed, F1 equal to F2. And what we see is that we can get some stationary dynamo. So what are the measurements? We can put some probes inside the flow, here, 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 and in this direction we can measure the magnetic field at several points in these probes. We can measure also the pressure, we can measure the driving torque of the experiment. Unfortunately, since then, we are not able to measure the velocity inside the flow, but we plan to do it soon. So, what was the first result? So, in September 2006, we have the first evidence of dynamo action, that is, when we increase the rotation speed of the two propellers above some frequency of 16 Hz, what we see is an exponential increase and then some stationary dynamo with very strong burst like this because it is very strongly turbulent. In red is the azimuthal component. So this is a measurement performed at this point, and this is in red the azimuthal component. In blue is the axial component, and in green the radial component. Okay? So the azimuthal component is the larger one, and you see it's fluctuating a lot. Now, depending on the run or on the day, you can have both a plus or minus magnetic field. That means the field is going in one direction or in the other direction. This is also always the azimuthal direction. So you can have both directions. Now we can look at the mean properties. So we take the mean of the three components of the magnetic field. And what do we see? This is a diagram. This is the mean magnetic field as a function of the magnetic Reynolds number. And what you see is that there is a threshold around 32 with an increase of the three components of the field. Just to remember the Earth's magnetic field in Cadarache, because of the hole and everything, is around 0.5 Gauss. And here we go up to 50 Gauss, that is 100 times the ambient magnetic field. Okay? So the bifurcation is slightly imperfect, as you see here. And in fact, it's very difficult to get the exponent here, alpha, because this alpha is somewhere between 0.5 and 1, and it's very difficult. Here is b squared, and you see you can also put some straight line, so that means that we don't know the exponent. Yes. The Rm is defined by the real velocity we have measured in water, in fact. So there is some coefficient factor. And so it's the real speed of sodium and not the speed of the propellers. Of the mean flow, of course. Of the mean flow. Okay? This is a mean magnetic Reynolds number. So I said the bifurcation was imperfect because of these soft ion disks. Because of this, when you get the dynamo for the first time, this is the blue curve, you have nearly a perfect bifurcation. And then you get here, and when you come back on the red curve, and all the other runs are on these red curves. So once you get dynamo action, once you get the magnetic field, you get a slight remnant magnetic field in your soft ion impellers. So you get this imperfect bifurcation here. Okay? The magnetization of the disk is very low. It's under 4 Gauss. Okay, we can also look at the scaling law of the saturated magnetic field. There was a prediction by François Petrelis and Stéphane Fauve, and we recover this prediction when we look at the magnetic field at 22 Hz for one propeller, and just here we decrease the temperature of sodium, and you see that we get different numbers. And if we put the good scaling, this is the turbulent scaling, there is also a laminar scaling, what we get is that the points are on a single line like this. So this is very much in favor of the turbulent scaling as predicted by François Petrelis and Stéphane Fauve. Now, what is the geometry of this magnetic field? And this was our first surprise. We were expecting an equatorial dipole in the experiment, that is a dipole transverse to the axis. And what we get is not this. We get a dipolar magnetic field, that is an axial field in the center, and with this very strong azimuthal component like this. So we get some kind of M equals 0B mode. So that's very strange, because this is different from the kinematic mode, as I told you, and this is a priori forbidden by the famous Colling theorem, because in the experiment, the mean velocity field is axisymmetric. So as the mean velocity field is axisymmetric, you can't get a priori an axisymmetric B mode. So in fact, this is not true, because this is for the mean field, but we have turbulent fluctuations. We have, there is the Earth's magnetic field. There are some hypotheses of the Colling theorem which are not fulfilled. But we end with this magnetic field. Just to show you here, the blue and red curve are the measurements performed in this point and in this point here, like this. We measure like this, just to show you that there is a single mode which is azimuthal. This is a cross correlation of 0.6 between the two points, showing there is one large scale magnetic field in the experiment.
Can you tell us how large are your turbulent
fluctuations
compared to the mean field?
In water, the turbulent fluctuations are 0.5 of the mean field. So that's very, very important, especially in the shear layer. Okay? So just to show you, you can measure things in water. This is a water model experiment. You can get the azimuthal field and the poloidal field by PIV measurements or LDV measurements. And then you can put it in the induction equation, and you get this equatorial M equal 1 dipole. This was a prediction. So what happens to this dipole? Maybe it's killed by the turbulent fluctuation in the shear layer, or maybe it could bifurcate toward this axial dipole we see for the saturated mode. Okay? So there is a prediction by François Petrelli, Stéphane Fauve, and Nicolas Jourdan about that, is that we can have some kind of turbulent alpha omega dynamo. Okay? So the omega effect is very simple. This is because we have a differential rotation in the experiment. But what for the alpha effect? The alpha effect could be due, it's an hypothesis, to the helicity, the vortices you have between the blades of the disc which are there. This helicity here, when you take the average, it's zero because of the it's rotating. But this could give, if you do a little you play a little game with the magnetic field and the current, etc., you can get some kind of alpha effect here near the two propellers. And because you have this differential rotation and because you have this alpha effect, you can get some turbulent non-axisymmetric dynamo. Yes? No. No, there is no problem. Because of the R, there is an RP symmetry here, and because of this symmetry, there is no problem of sign. I can show you. So it's okay. It's okay for sign. Yes. No. It's a bit long, but I can show you. It was a problem. It takes some time, but it's okay. There is no problem of sign because of this. So after the geometry of the dynamo field, we can look at the power. What we get is it's a bit difficult in the experiment to measure the power, and we are planning to put some real torque measurements. But what we get is that without dynamo, this is the torque as a function of the speed of the propellers. The right points are without dynamo, and the blue ones with dynamo, which gives some curve like this, which means an increase of power between 10% and 50%. This has to be checked with real torque measurements. So now we can look at the fluctuations. We have looked at the bifurcation of the mean field. We can look at the bifurcation of the RMS value of the three components. And what you see is also this bifurcation for the three components of the RMS value around 32. And what you can do also to look at this bifurcation is that you can plot this RMS value above B, And what you see is that some kind of divergence around 32, and then a change of behavior here. So we found it very interesting to look at this quantity, to look at the threshold because of the imperfect aspect of the bifurcation here. You know, we are in presence, we have a bifurcation in presence of noise, so it's a bit difficult to measure this. What? No, it's not. No, BRMS is the RMS value of the this is this is BX RMS square plus BY RMS square plus BZ RMS square power 1/2 over B square. Okay? Over mean. So we can look also at the PDFs of the fluctuation. Here you have the PDF for several Reynolds, magnetic Reynolds number. In blue, this is under the threshold. Here you have something which is peaked, and then it is it is going like this, and you end up with something with some exponential tail, which is going, you know, here is the mean value is around something like minus 60 or 70, but you have some events which are positive, even in this case. So this is above threshold, and this is not Gaussian. You can look also at the power spectra, and here you can have all the exponents you want for theoreticians, that's very interesting. So here are several curves for several magnetic Reynolds number for the axial component and the radial component, which are quite different. The azimuthal component is behaving like the radial component. So here you have some zero exponent, and then some minus 5/3, and then some minus 11/3. And in the case of the radial and the azimuthal component, we have some minus 1 behavior here over a decade, and then some minus 11/3, and even more than that, something which is minus 6, maybe minus 17 over 3. Okay? So we don't know very much. Yes, all of these are dynamos. In fact, this is not very different from induction results. There is no real difference between induction power spectra and dynamo power spectra. It was a surprise for us. Okay, what you can see also is there is a small bump here on this point, and this is very very low, this corresponds to a very low frequency. Here is the frequency of rotation here, and this is maybe 0.02 of the rotation frequency here. So I come again on this point. So this was for the stationary dynamo when rotating the two propellers at the same speed. Now, what happens if we rotate the two propellers at different speed here? We end up with a lot of dynamics, and in particular with some reversals of the magnetic field like this one. So why did we do that? Is that it's very difficult to rotate the experiment, to add some global rotation to the experiment because of technical, practical problems. But it's very easy in the von Karman experiment to get F1 different from F2. And we have performed some measurements in water that says that there is quite a similarities between this case and this case. So when we rotate at different speed, it's nearly equivalent. Of course, it's not equivalent if you look precisely at the boundary, but it's nearly equivalent to add a global rotation on your symmetric problem. So what do we get? We get this. This is the mean magnetic Reynolds number, and this is the rotation number, which we call theta, which is the difference between the two frequency of the two propellers. The symmetric dynamo is somewhere here. Here, when you have an open circle, it means that you have no dynamo, and here blue circle means the usual stationary dynamo, and then you have all this range of behavior you can see. You can see some limit cycles, some intermittency, some reversals, some extinction during 3 minutes. You have no dynamo, and then dynamo grows up again without changing the parameters. We can have some very irregular oscillation, all these depending on the two, these two parameters here. So I will speak about some of them. First of all, the reversals of the magnetic field. So we were very surprised to see these reversals. This is the magnetic field as a function of times. This is 900 seconds. And here is the three components of the magnetic field. This is the azimuthal component, as usual in red. And this is the power. And what you see is that you see these chaotic inversions of the magnetic field. And the three components of the magnetic field are going to zero together. Okay? So the field is like this, is rotating like this. And then it's going to zero, reverse, and going in the other direction like this. Okay? And this is associated with some decrease of the power injected in the system. So each time you have a reversal, you have this decrease of power. So this decrease of power corresponds to the magnetic field you have in the experiment. You can also see some kinds of what geophysicists would call excursions. That is the magnetic field going near zero and then growing again without changing sign. Okay, what we can do is that we can superimpose all this decay on a single curve. Here you have 20 reversals, and what you see is that you have this state, this minus, this negative state, then an exponential decrease to zero, and then a very quick increase, quasi-linear, with an overshoot, and then you get on the positive dynamo part of it. And just for fun, we put some, I'm not saying that it is the same for the Earth, just for fun I put the result by Vallée et al. About the reversals in the Earth. So be careful, because geophysicists are going the other way around. Time is going this way. So time is going this way, so you have this slow decrease here. Here you have this 1, 2, 3, 5 events, nearly on the same. And then there is a reversal. This is the absolute value. That's why it remains positive. And then you increase very fast here. And in the case of VKS, the diffusion time is some 0.4 seconds. Of course, in the Earth, it's something like 20,000 years. But if you look at the at the duration of a plus or a minus magnetic interval, you get the same ratio between this experiment and these observations. So that was for the reversal. Now we can look also at the burst regime. The burst regimes happened over some stationary dynamo around 20 Gauss, and you can have peaks up to 120 Gauss. And you can look at the PDF, at the spectrum. The spectrum is some minus 2 slope, which is very, very well over 2 decades here. That's for other rotation number here. You can look also at some very regular oscillating dynamo. These are the three components of the magnetic field as a function of time for different ratio, for different rotation number. So you see, when you increase this global rotation, you increase the frequency of dynamo. You can have a look at this. This is the magnetic field as a function of this parameter theta. What you see is that the magnetic field is increasing nearly like in a usual bifurcation of a low dimensional system. It is coming from a stationary dynamo here for the squares and going to an oscillatory dynamo in blue. And if you look at the frequency is going from zero to some value here. And it is also increasing like theta minus theta critical to the power 1/2. So that was, we were very surprised to see that we have some kind of a finite amplitude and zero frequency secondary bifurcation of this from a stationary dynamo to an oscillating dynamo, just as in low dimensional system. And you can see that this dynamo frequency is increasing like this. And you can remark that this frequency is very small. It's 10 to the minus 2, the frequency of rotation of the propellers. Now, I want to show you this. Just for fun also, this is a rotation number as defined in the experiment, and you can also define it for stars. I'm sorry because I'm not astrophysicist and maybe I put some wrong names here, but you can correct me. Just to show you that this is the frequency, the dynamo frequency over the rotation frequency as a function of the rotation number. What you see is just the result of the VKS experiment here I showed you, increasing like this. And in blue are the stars which look like the sun. The sun is here somewhere here. And here you have some binary objects. All the results, I think Sasha or yesterday, or I don't remember, but told you about. And you see that even if it is increasing in this small part here, you have a very large decrease from the sun, from the VKS experiment towards the Earth. If I would put that the Earth is oscillating with a regular frequency, which is not the case. But is it the case for the Sun? I don't know. I understand that the period of the Sun was late by 1 year this year. It was 23 years instead of 22 years. So maybe it's not so regular. I don't know. So just now in the in the few minutes I have, I want, you have seen these different regimes. Now I want to speak a little bit about the transition between these dynamical regimes. Okay? First of all, is a transition between a stationary and a limit cycle dynamo. For stationary dynamo, I told you we have this dipole axial field. And this is when we have the same frequency of rotation of the two propellers. Here is the frequency of rotation, 22-22, meaning that we are exactly in exact contour rotation. This is in black. What you can do is that you keep one propeller at this frequency and you decrease the frequency of the other propeller. And what you get is this dark blue, and then you go to 19, you get this light blue, and then you go to 22-18.5, and what you get, say, instead of a stationary dynamo, you get some limit cycle going through the stationary point you have on this kind of phase diagram. This is a radial component of the magnetic field. This is the azimuthal component of the magnetic field. For the stationary dynamo, you have quasi no radial magnetic field, whereas for the limit cycle, you have strong radial field going from plus to minus. This could mean that we have some quadrupole mode like this one, and you see the field can go inside or outside depending if you are here or here. So we have some kind of interaction between a dipole mode and a quadrupole mode, giving this beautiful limit cycle with a relaxation oscillation like this. So you see the green part is the radial magnetic field going from plus to minus, etc. So then if you decrease again the frequency of your propeller, you get again a stationary dynamo, and then another stationary dynamo, and this dynamo, and then you get the reversals I told you about before. So when you analyze this problem, you you can say that even if the problem is fully turbulent, even if the kinetic Reynolds number is 10 to the 7, the dynamo was made maybe because of the turbulent fluctuations, we have some kind of a low-dimensional system, and we have some kind of a saddle bifurcation between a fixed point here and a limit cycle. It is as if you are in a usual pendulum excitable system in which you can get this kind of diagram. So that was very interesting to see that. Yes. Yes, we are measuring it. We are measuring in this point here, in this point here, here, and here. I cannot claim that this is a perfect quadrupole mode. But when we measure here, we see these things. And when we measure here, we see that the radial component is far much smaller. So maybe this is not a perfect quadrupole, but this has something to do with a quadrupole. So there is some kind of interaction between this dipole and this quadrupole. But we have to perform some new measurements about this, okay? So, the other transition for the dynamo reversal I told you about, this is a superimposition I showed you before. And what you can do is you can play the little game we are used to play maybe 30 years ago, is that you construct your phase space with the delay method. Here is the azimuthal component plus delta t, azimuthal component plus 2 delta t. And you have this kind of curve. And here is this p point corresponds to this state, minus p corresponds to this state, and in between you go through q. So you go very slowly to this point q, and then you go very quickly to this with this overshoot here, and back on this minus p. And you have the symmetric part of it. This, of course, has been filtered, and there is a lot of noise around these curves. So you have some kind of heteroclinic orbits connecting two unstable fixed points, these two points corresponding to these two states. Maybe I have 5 minutes. Yes, I just want to show you maybe something that Jean-François Pinton didn't tell you. Is that this is the state diagram. This is the magnetic Reynolds number as a function of the rotation number. And all the interesting dynamics, the burst, the reversal, the extension, etc., are arriving around point 2. And this corresponds to a transition in water. We have measured this transition in water between two cells regime and one cell regime. This is the mean flow, of course. The flow is fully turbulent. This is the mean flow. And we have this transition here around something around point 18 in water, a transition from one cell to two cells. So this reversal has something to do with also the hydrodynamic background. There is an interrelation between the hydrodynamics and the magnetodynamics. So I have no time to speak about this. Just I want to conclude. I hope I convinced you that in the VKS experiment, we can see some stationary turbulent dynamo when the two frequencies are equal, with an axisymmetric neutral mode, which cannot be generated by the mean flow alone. Second, when you rotate the experiment at different frequency, which is nearly equivalent to add a global rotation to your system, you have these lots of very different dynamical dynamos. And the dynamics of all these dynamos are characteristic of low-dimensional systems, which was quite a surprise for us, and which do not seem to be qualitatively modified by the turbulent fluctuation, even if these turbulent fluctuations have made the dynamo. Okay, I can stop here.
We have plenty of time for questions. Why don't we...
In with Yeah, I had a comment related to Dan's question. So I think that indeed, if you start with a purely axial field,
yes,
and then you rotate it this way, you know,
yes,
you will get an azimuthal field,
yes,
which will have the same sign everywhere. And you call that,
yes,
a dipole field. But
yes,
most astrophysicists call a dipole a field for which the axial component is like the one you have,
yes,
but then the azimuthal field reverses sign across the midplane of your device. So that's very unusual for us. So
you mean the axial part reverse here?
Well, the sign, if you take the midplane,
yes,
of your device,
yes,
the sign of what I will call BZ reverses?
Yes. No, it doesn't here.
It doesn't, yeah, reverse, yeah, but the azimuthal field should reverse in what we call it a dipole field.
I didn't know that. It, yes, when I have a reversal, everything is changing. Here, the dipole is like this, and the azimuthal like this, and then when it reverses, it goes to zero, and then it's going like this, and it's rotating like this, azimuthal. Both signs changes. Yes, in all the experiments, yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, what we call the equator is the midplane of your device, okay?
Yes, the midplane is not the equator.
It's just a comment to say,
yes,
that things,
okay,
are different, yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
You made simulations with the mean flow.
Yes.
Which is axisymmetric.
Did, yes,
you also make the simulations considering the convection, the smaller scale motions?
No.
No.
No, we didn't.
And
do that.
You argued that you have an alpha effect between the plates of the.
Yes. This is
I would expect you have it everywhere. You have small scale motions.
Yes.
You have a rotation.
We can have an alpha effect, a turbulent alpha effect, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, possible.
Sorry?
There is no certification.
It's possible.
Oh, it would be interesting to construct a mean field model and look whether,
yes,
it really,
yeah,
provides a mode with m equals zero.
Okay. I agree. Yes. Yes.
Oh, actually, have a couple of questions. And the first of them is,
hold your mic closer.
Oh, like this. Okay. When you showed us the bifurcation curve for the case when you had the iron propellers and when you,
yes, this one,
like that.
Yes.
Yes. So you mentioned that it's imperfect because of the presence of the iron propellers.
We think so. But
okay,
it's difficult to say because we have no dynamo when we use a stainless steel propeller. So we think so.
Okay.
There is some remnant magnetization of the disk. Very small, but there is.
So I guess it will be difficult to know if that imperfection is actually caused by turbulence.
No, I don't think so, because in this case, we have demagnetized the apparatus, and you know it's nearly perfect. So that's all I can say. But once you have you get the dynamo, it's finished. You have this magnetization, this, so I can't answer.
Peter, also next.
So have you looked at the nature of the field during the time of the reversal? Does the field actually go to zero,
yes,
at some point?
Yes, it's going to zero.
And it's reconstructed?
Yes, it's going to zero. I think it's clear on this line here, this one. Okay, look, the three components are going to zero here. It's going to zero. In fact, we have two kinds of reversal. It's a bit complicated. I just want to speak about one type of reversal. In this type of reversal, the three components are going to zero at the same time, and we have a decrease of the power injected. In another kind of reversal in other campaigns for the different rotation number, the three components don't go to zero at the same time, and we don't get the power going, of course, to zero. But for this rotation number and in the presence of the annulus, we always get this. Okay? Yes.
Is the mode there what you call dipolar or is it quadrupolar? And you seem to suggest that it was a sort of interaction between dipole and quadrupole that was giving you your reversals.
No, in fact, this oscillating mode is not related to this one.
Yeah. Right.
So, this one, you see, you have some kind of relaxation oscillations.
Yeah.
These are very this is related to this.
Yeah.
The oscillations are not related to this kind of oscillation.
Right.
And I'm afraid I don't know the geometry of the mode. We haven't looked carefully at this because in this case, if I remember well, we have only 2 point measurements, and it was not enough to say if this is a dipole or a quadrupole.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, that's obviously
that's a question. But these oscillations open here for very large rotation number, and we can also get some oscillation around here. In this case, when it is the rotation is one, it means that you have one propeller at rest and only one propeller rotation.
Sure.
So I don't know the exact geometry of the field in this case, I'm afraid.
Your imperfect bifurcation curves, do you recover exactly the same trace when you go back
even
at a slower speed?
What do you mean at slower speed?
I mean, you can adjust your parameters more slowly. And
the two
you
curves
recover exactly
here,
the same points.
The two curves here, the two red curves, are only because we are measuring at different points. So the stars and the circles are the measurements at different points. But you when you come back, you get exactly on the same curve for all the other runs. Yes. You stay there and you don't move. Only the first the first curve. And in two or three very special runs, and we don't know why, we go until there without dynamo. And then dynamo. And then again this curve. And we don't know why.
I have a question.
Yes.
Could you get back the figure where you have all the attractors and the limit cycle?
Sorry, it's coming.
Yeah.
This one? Yes.
So it looks like the fixed points are sat on the limit cycle. Is that a projection effect?
They are.
So this is
In fact, the limit cycle is going through this fixed point.
Right, so this is a sniper bifurcation. A sniper bifurcation?
I don't know this,
okay.
I'm afraid.
Okay. That's where you have the saddle node actually on the periodical.
I did not know the name.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, we've got it stands for saddle node infinite period, and then I don't know what the ER stands
Ooh,
for.
Okay.
Do
you have a paper on that?
No. But
we can discuss.
Okay.
I'd like to take the last question. You didn't address it explicitly. So what's the zeroth order effect is that there's iron present. What's the overall thinking of the group on the role of iron in the transition?
So this is a very good question. This is different when speaking from Paris, from Saclay, or from Lyon. So from the Paris point of view, and of course it's some kind of trivial, the iron changes the boundary condition for the magnetic field. The field is supposed to be perpendicular to it, and you can have this azimuthal magnetization in the soft iron propeller. So when you change, and they have performed some simulation with Gilles Singer and Emmanuel Dormy in a spherical code about that. And it changes the threshold just because of the boundary condition. Maybe if we put some iron for the copper shell, instead of the copper shell, some iron shell, it will change also the threshold. That's for one point. The other point is that in Saclay, we wanted to use the iron propeller because we know by a simulation of Franck Stéphanie that the sodium behind the propellers is very bad for the dynamo threshold. So the sodium rotating behind the propeller is increasing the threshold by a factor 2 or 3, which means by a factor 10 or 20 for the power. So this is another thing. And by putting some iron propeller, you make some shield from the sodium which is behind. So to try this idea, we perform a new campaign with a stainless steel propeller, but with vacuum behind them. And we didn't get the dynamo, but by performing some magnetic decay experiment, we find that the threshold could be at something around 60 in magnetic Reynolds number. But unfortunately, the experiment is going only to 52. And going from 52 to 60 is very expensive. That's only a problem of money. You have to increase your power by 50%. That means your money by 50%. So maybe we can do that. So these are the two reasons.
Maybe one follow-up question there. So the simulations just used a uniform iron around the entire sphere, or is the geometry of the iron important?
They use the Gissinger, Berger, do you remember? The Gissinger simulation use, I think, iron everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere, both on the propeller and here. And there is also a simulation by Jacques Léora, Caroline Nord, etc. They are trying to put iron here. But it's very difficult, I think, for numerics to put boundary condition with a mu.
Localized.
Yes, with a localized mu. I think it's a great mathematical problem to do that.
Let's thank him again.